Welcome to the People and Projects Podcast, where you'll find interviews and insights to help you deliver projects and lead teams. You can find us on the web at peopleandprojectspodcast.com. Hi, this is Andy Kaufman, President of the Institute for Leadership Excellence Development Incorporated. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the People and Projects Podcast. Let me take a guess. I'm going to bet you don't have time to listen to this podcast episode, do you? Well, you're listening to it, but perhaps you're driving or trying to do email and, well, hopefully not both at the same time. With all that's on our plates, the overall toll on us and our productivity can be overwhelming, which made me think of Tony Schwartz's book, The Way We're Working Isn't Working. Tony is a gifted writer and speaker and an expert on helping us perform at our best. I had the opportunity to spend some time talking with Tony, and because of length, I've divided the interview into two podcast episodes. Quick note for my premium subscribers, make sure to check out your premium feed for some additional coaching related to my discussions with Tony. So go ahead, turn off your handheld, shut down any distractions, and let's learn from one of the freshest voices out there on performance and productivity, Tony Schwartz. I'm joined today by Tony Schwartz. Tony's the president and CEO of The Energy Project, a company that helps individuals and organizations fuel energy, engagement, focus, and productivity by harnessing the science of high performance. Tony has spent 30 years studying, writing about, teaching, and coaching people how to perform at their best. And Tony's book, The Power of Full Engagement, Managing Energy, Not Time, co-authored with Jim Lehrer, was a number one Wall Street Journal and a New York Times bestseller. Before that, Tony co-authored The Art of the Deal with Donald Trump. And today, we're going to focus on his newest book, The Way We're Working Isn't Working, The Four Forgotten Needs That Energize Great Performance. Tony, thank you for joining us for the People and Projects Podcast.
Thank you.
Okay, Tony, let's get right to the title of the book. Yeah, what is it about the way we're working that isn't working? And what are the resulting consequences from that?
Basically, the demand in our lives has kind of overwhelmed us. And the problem is that as long as demand isn't too high, you have the capacity, without thinking about it, to meet it.
Mm-hmm.
You take capacity, which is basically the fuel in your tank, for granted.
Yeah.
But when demand reaches the levels it has, in large part, by the way, because of technology and the fact that we have access to so much all the time, then there comes a point where you kind of top out. And part of the reason is that for a long time, as demand has gone up, what we've done is we've simply invested more time. We've invested more hours in every day. But now we've run out of hours. Our dance cards are full, and the demand keeps going up. So that's a prescription for the perfect storm, and that is what I think has begun to happen in a lot of our lives.
Yeah, you know, and I think you're right. Deep down, everyone listening here says, you know, I know it. I know the pace that I have here is unsustainable, yet somehow I think it starts feeling like a trap. In today's rocky, thinly staffed, insecure economic work environment, I just can't get out of it. And many of the people listening, Tony, they're in leadership roles, maybe for over teams, departments, projects. What I appreciated from the way you wrote this book is not only can we slip into the mindset ourselves, but how we as leaders can enable the dysfunction within our organization, encouraging the problems with others. Can you think of some examples of that?
It's a kind of conspiracy. It's a silent conspiracy. It's a little bit of a Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, the organizational mandate is, and this is kind of a blend of what's intrinsically in a market economy, mm-hmm. and then the special demands that rise when you are in a recession, and so you've cut back the number of people, and therefore those who remain have to do more. The organization moves in the direction of more, bigger, faster.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to what I started with, which is more, bigger, faster can only work so long as resources are unlimited.
Yeah, right.
But when resources are limited, eventually the more, bigger, faster is going to run into a wall. And then because culture is so powerful, because leaders are what I call chief energy officers.
Yeah.
In other words, their energy is disproportionately influential in the organization. And mm-hmm. I don't only mean a leader, like the top leader, the CEO, but I also mean a manager at any level. Whoever is in charge has disproportionate energy by virtue of his or her influence. And then what happens is individuals think success is what the leader both does and tells me I have to do. So at a certain point, and we've seen this, I'm going to give you a really great example of this, at a certain point, you begin to identify what they call in psychological terms, identify with the aggressor, or, you know, you begin to go along with the system, just as you've described. So that's what a lot of us have done. We've done things that when we ask ourselves and we stop long enough, and by the way, few of us stop long enough to do much of anything. We're moving. But when we stop long enough to ask ourselves, you know, does this make sense? We very clearly see that it doesn't. One of the questions we ask in our groups when we go into organizations is, you know, after we help them to assess how they're actually functioning, is the life you're living worth the price you're paying to live it? And so, you know, with one of the places we see this is, as you know, we've just launched this movement called Take Back Your Lunch.
I love that.
You know, the movement is located now on a website, which is called, not surprisingly, takebackyourlunch.com.
Yep.
And we've worked with Meetup to create the possibility for people to join it all over the world. And in 85 cities around the world today, people have begun to do this. And the interesting thing is we're getting a lot of feedback about it. And one of the things we hear from people, this is not surprising, is, I don't have time. Or... if I walk out to lunch, I just heard this yesterday, I was at a Take Back Your Lunch event. If I walk out of the office for lunch, people look at me and go, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Well, how crazy is that?
It's crazy.
What am I doing? I'm going to lunch. The next thing you know, they're going to be asking you, hey, I noticed you're breathing. why are you breathing?
You don't have time for that.
Do you really need to do that? Don't you have other things that are better to do with your time? So this is what I mean by the identification, what we've lost touch with. Why should you take back your lunch? You should take back your lunch not simply because it is a way to relax and to put food back into your system and to get away from the continuous work, but also because in refueling your energy, you come back in the afternoon and you are actually able to do work not only more efficiently, but at a more focused level, so therefore a higher quality of work. We lose connection to that.
We do. You know what? And I can think of a coaching client, Tony, where he said, my boss, this guy like never sleeps. He sends me email at 4 a.m. I feel like I need to get up at 5:30 so I can answer his email. And in a very subtle way, whether that boss realized it or not, he was putting that pressure on his team to do like what you're talking about here, right? Start abusing themselves and setting them up when maybe isn't their best time to work.
And whose best time is 4 a.m?
I can sign up for that's not me, that's for sure.
Yeah, you or virtually anybody else. But the thing is, your point is really important, is that there are all kinds of things that have happened with technology that have prompted people to do things without thinking about their consequences. So you're a manager, and you happen to be the kind of person who either has insomnia or is... you know, wakes up in the middle of the night worrying about things and writes emails. What you don't stop to think is that because you're the chief energy officer, because you're the model of how people behave, everybody else now suddenly thinks, oh my gosh, I better do it that way myself. So the missing word here in the world we live in is intentionality.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have to be intentional about managing our energy when there was plenty of it. We didn't have to be intentional about the message about when somebody should work and not work when there was no email. All of these things have come along that provide, listen, I'm not a critic. I'm not a Luddite who thinks that email or technology is a bad thing. They're great things, but we have to learn whole other ways to use them and to create boundaries around them. And that's part of really a lot of what the way we're working isn't working is about. It's about implicitly and explicitly defining a better way of working.
Yeah, that's such a great way to say it, Tony. And the point I wanted to make sure people got early on is this is very personal and it's taking control of our life, but it's also from a leadership perspective, making sure we don't penalize people either by the way we model it or by saying, hey, you know, Andrew doesn't look too busy over there. Give him more. It could be he got his act together, but we almost penalize it. There's so many things we do that can actually reinforce it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right on track. So, you know, when you measure a person by the number of hours they put in at the desk and the number of things in quotes, that they appear to be doing, what you're doing is you're missing the point. It's not the number of hours people work that matters. It's the sustainable value they generate during whatever hours they work. So the question that a leader or a manager wants to ask himself is, what do I believe, reasonably speaking, success looks like for each of the people who work for me? And at the point at which I define what success looks like, then what I want to do is treat that each employee as an adult and say to that person, here's what success looks like. You tell me, and I'm happy to help if you want it, but you tell me what is the best way for you to be successful, and then leave them alone. And if they produce, pat them on the back, give them rewards, move them up to the next job. And if they don't produce, so long as you've defined what accountability means, what success means, then say to them, listen, it's nothing personal, but this is what the job required. You couldn't do it. You're gone. That's a whole different way of working with employees.
Yeah, you know, instead of measuring number of hours, we're going to start measuring the number of lunches. You know, Tony, that's what we're going to do.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a funny, I know you're saying that jokingly, but, you know, I would say that measuring the quality of renewal, and I'm not suggesting organizations literally have a way to do this, but thinking in these terms, measuring or valuing the quality of renewal that people get over the course of a day is a very good indicator of how productive they're likely to be over the course of that day. You know, at the physical level, fitness is defined as the speed of recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So the fitter you are, the faster you recover.
Makes sense, yeah.
And what is that? What's the implication of that? Well, what it means is that in order to be the highest level of fitness, you have to train recovery. Mm-hmm. That means you have to get better at recovery. You have to value recovery or renewal. And the same is true, not just for athletes, but for us. The faster we can recover, meaning we push ourselves really hard at something and we're tired, we bounce back. Or emotionally, we get a piece of bad news or somebody says something to us that is upsetting or frustrating, and how resilient are we? How quickly can we return to a base level? Those are measurements of how effective you're going to be able to be. So part of you, I know you started out saying this in a joking way, how many lunches, but part of assessing an employee's value is, how good is that person at renewing? How good is that person at bouncing back?
That's right. There's a leadership assessment used that measures resilience. And I think you're exactly right. That because some people can turn a bad day into a bad year, you know, because they aren't recovering from that. So, you know, I want to get on to this concept of the four core areas that you've got in this book. You know, I want people to read the books. So I want them to get the details. But at a high level, you talk about these four core areas that energize great performance and then the importance of pulsing across those areas. So at a high level, what are those four areas? And what do you mean by this pulsing in terms of great performance?
One of the core ideas that animate the new paradigm we're talking about for business is a shift from the current ethic of thinking of ourselves as computers.
Mm-hmm.
We're thinking that we're capable of operating the same way computers do, at high speeds, continuously for long periods of time, running multiple programs at the same time. Great for a computer, not what human beings are designed to do. Human beings are literally designed to pulse.
Mm.
When you are healthy, your heart is pulsing, your blood pressure is rising and falling, your brain's waving, literally, from high electrical activity, low electrical activity, when you get into a sleep state. All of those are measurements of your well-being. And instead, we try to operate in a linear way. So the key to great performance is the movement between expending energy and renewing energy.
Mm-hmm.
That's at all levels, physical, emotional, mental, even spiritual. So that's the idea of pulsing, is to really recognize that what we want to do is move between expenditure and renewal throughout the day. Now, the four energy needs that have what I call the four needs, or the four energy needs, are the ones that we need to move between the expending of energy and then the renewing of energy. And the first one is physical. That's the most obvious one, and it's the foundation. It's what every other form of energy rests on. So if you don't take care of it, then you've got a faulty foundation. And at the physical level, there are four key elements of physical energy. It's fitness, nutrition, sleep, and renewal or daytime rest. If you are operating in the right way in each of those four areas, And the right way, science tells us a lot about. And I'm not going to take time on our call to talk about them, but that's really worked out in the way we're working. Is it working? I think of the way we're working, isn't working as a roadmap for how to systematically take back control of each of these dimensions of your life. So that's the physical one. The emotional one is really the notion that the quality of your energy, how you feel, profoundly influences how you perform. Mm. So to learn what feelings actually serve great performance, and then how do you both cultivate those emotions and get them back when something happens that knocks you out of that emotional framework. For somebody listening right now, the simple way to know what emotions serve you best as a performer mm-hmm. is to think about how do I feel when I'm performing at my best, and write down the adjectives. And here's the deal. Anytime you're not feeling that way, you're suboptimal as a performer.
It's so funny you say that, Tony, because I think of my oldest son. He's a keeper in soccer. One of the best things that can happen to him is he gets hit early in the game and he gets angry. He gets, it's like this monster comes out of him, and he has monster games when that happens. It's like an emotional state he has to get into, but he almost can't get himself into that himself. It's kind of funny.
Well, that's interesting because I'm going to bet that your son, how old is he?
He's 15.
So I'm going to bet that your son, and I want you to go home and ask him this tonight.
Yeah.
To get fired up by something that happens is obviously a value.
Yeah.
But anger is not an emotion that people describe having when they're performing at their best.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, yeah.
And I will bet that he would say, yeah, I get charged up by it, but then what I get into is a state that is much, much calmer. I mean, it's got energy, but it's calmer.
Right, right.
And it's when because anger makes it very hard to focus.
I see.
And you certainly, as a keeper, in soccer, you have to be able to focus. You have to, you have to have that. You have to have that really that broad vision. You have to be able to see the field, all of that stuff.
Anticipate, and maybe it's more intensity than anger, maybe.
Yes, exactly. Intensity, yeah. So that, but you see, what's great about this what we're talking about is these distinctions are really important, and people can get misled and think because anger, particularly for a leader. Anger is a very powerful short-term motivator, but it's a very poisonous long-term motivator.
That's a good way of saying
and
it.
And so, if you want to use anger, and the time to use anger is in a situation of very, very high threat where you need to get a reaction very fast, like if there's a lion coming at you, you either want to get very angry at that lion so you can kill it, or you want to run like hell. But in most situations, it's not life or death, and those situations are not ones that are served by those emotions.
So, makes sense, yeah.
Anyway, that's the emotional.
Yep.
Mental. Mental is just focus. Mental is about the energy. The need there is for focus, the ability to do one thing at a time in an absorbed way. And gosh, we know how under siege our attention is, don't we?
Oh, that's for sure.
There are people who are listening to this right now who are also surfing their internet, answering emails, making dinner,
right.
Trying to chat with their wives or husbands or children. I mean, all this crazy stuff where we split our attention because we think it's the way to get more things done.
Yes.
But it's not. It's not. It makes it so that you are partially engaged in lots of things and never fully engaged in anything.
Mm.
And so to take back our attention, to learn how to actually train the ability to focus on one thing at a time in a world that is fighting against you on that one is a critical component of sustainable high performance. And then finally is the energy of the human spirit, or we even call it spiritual energy, which is really, though it sounds soft, the most important source of energy for one simple reason. We define this not in religious terms, although some people see it through that lens, which is fine, but you don't have to. We define it as the energy you get from deeply held values that you embody in your everyday behavior. Meaning, if you're motivated from inside and it shows up in your behavior, that's a powerful source of energy. And think of it just this way. When something really matters to you, do you bring more energy to it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Of course, the answer is yes. So there they are. you know, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. Those are the four needs. That's what you need to fire on all cylinders. And we pay way too little attention to training and renewing each of those four.
Yeah, probably way too much on the mental and not enough on the others, I would have to guess, maybe, huh?
Well, we spend most of our energy mentally, but unfortunately, we don't spend it well, even mentally, right? Because we split our attention so much of the time. But yes, your point is right. We need all four sources of energy, and we under-train almost all of them.
And make sure to check out the links in the show notes for Tony's websites and books. And make sure to listen to part two of my interview with Tony for additional insights. Well, thank you for joining us for this episode of the People and Projects Podcast.